Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Republic Education Call for the United States of America and our Republican form of self-governance for December 3rd, 2024 at 8:30 p.m. I'm Phyllis Marie, and I'll start this call with a devotional that's based on Jeremiah 31, verse 3, and Lamentations 3, verses 22 to 26. I love you with an everlasting love, which flows out from the depths of eternity. Before you were born, I knew you. Ponder the awesome mystery of a love that encompasses you from before birth to beyond the grave. Modern man has lost the perspective of eternity. To distract himself from the gaping jaws of death, he engages in ceaseless activity and amusement. The practice of being still in my presence is almost a lost art, yet it is this very stillness that enables you to experience my eternal love. You need the certainty of my loving presence in order to weather the storms of life. During times of severe testing, even the best theology can fail you if it isn't accompanied by experiential knowledge of me. The ultimate protection against sinking during life's storms is devoting time to develop your friendship with me. And our republic, we the people of the republic, are peaceful, lawful, and private. And our declaration states, when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And this evening, folks, if you will put yourself on mute, unless it's at the time of questions and answers, we would appreciate it, because there is some background noise that I'm hearing. And if I mute you, it's because I think it's coming from your phone. So, and also, if you're new to the call this evening and you would like to receive our notices with the attachments, please send me an email at blueridge1121@gmail.com, and we'll give out that address again towards the end of the call. Okay, this evening, I'm not sure whether I'm supposed to give it over to Marilyn or Nikki.
Nikki.
Okay, Nikki.
Yeah.
Nikki has a message for everyone. Go ahead, Nikki.
I have a message for everyone. Yes. You heard Stephen on the call.
Nikki, you're kind of garbled.
Oh no, not again. It seems like it's always the same with this. I don't know how to correct that. Can you hear me okay?
It's still pretty garbled a little bit, so I don't know if you're... Can you take it off of speaker, maybe?
Are
you using your phone or the computer?
I'm using the computer.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't use them. But if you can hear anything that I say, just Stephen was shot in the face with a shotgun by someone who he ordered something of a solar panel that he had ordered from Marketplace on Facebook. So be careful. Okay, and in looking at this guy's record, he's been doing a lot of this stuff. Not Stephen, but the fellow who shot him. Okay? So please be careful and pray that his right eye gains sight. because he was shot right in the face. He's got it's incredible. But just keep him in your purse, please. And other people who buy things from people they don't know like that, have them come to the property. Okay? With that, I yield.
Thank you, Nikki. Marilyn?
Okay, Marilyn. You're next.
Okay. It's time for some advertisements. Number one, Thursday evening this week, there will be a special call for men and women who cherish freedom, peace, and independence. It's probably the most important meeting you'll ever experience, so don't miss it. Join the union call at 8:30 Eastern. Your life depends on it, as well as the future of mankind. Number two, on December 12th, Edward Mann is returning to give us more testimonies on his successes with the calcium bentonite clay and the More Mital Restore products.
Oh.
You may want to learn how to obtain and use these products after strangers and friends have shed on you. Yes, I said shed. Edward will be presenting during the Thursday, December 12th Republic Health Call. Join us and invite as many shedders as you wish. Number three, Let Food Be Your Medicine is the theme for our guest speaker on January 9th, and that's 2025 for the Republic Health Call. Question, do you like chocolate? Well, that's it for the ads tonight. This is Marilyn, Minnesota, signing off. Daryl, you're up next.
Okay, thank you, Marilyn. And welcome, everyone. There's a few attachments down on the bottom of the deal. And one, we're going to try to get into this after the first of the year, but we're going to be talking about why Americans have the right to a trial by jury. And Thomas Jefferson made the statement, I quote, he said, "I consider trial by jury as one, as the only anchor ever yet imagined by man by which government can be held to the principles of its constitution." And this is where they've taken away, and this is where it brings the authority back to the people, where you have a right to a jury of your peers. And in order to have a trial by jury, there must be an injured party. It can't be a corporate fiction coming after you. One of the state ofs or the all capital letter United States Inc. or anything like that. And this is what we've got to get back to. So after this early next year, we're going to start trying to share the importance and the things that need to be done to set up your trial by jury and your grand juries. And also on the 10th and 12th, Ray from Michigan is going to be back, and he's going to do more of the administrative process, part two and part three. It'll be a good session, and this is what we need to do to basically avoid the court and deal with the issue just one-on-one, you know, by using through the administrative process, through affidavits and stuff where they have to rebut and you establish the facts. And tonight we've got Ed George back, and he does a remarkable amount of research. And he'll be talking about, you know, whether you're a citizen or a taxpayer or a ward of the court, and are you this all capital letters person under the color of law? And then how to impeach an officer of the court. So, Ed, if you want to step forward.
Darryl?
Yes. Yes, Kent?
Yeah, this is Kent. We need to make a correction on that. Ray from Michigan is coming back on the 10th and 17th, not the 10th
yes.
and 12th.
Oh, okay. I said the 12th?
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
Oh, my golly. That's the first mistake I've ever made in my life. April Fool.
Good thing we have somebody monitoring the calls, huh?
No kidding. Well, okay. thank you for the correction. The 10th and the 17th. So, Ed, if you want to take the floor, the wheel's yours.
Well, thank you for that introduction there, Daryl. This is Edmund George. For those of you probably know me on my Saturday weekly call. And, yeah, I'm going to cover a few things. We're going to cover about a taxpayer, citizen, and word meanings, as well to have a corporate officer impeached in a court case. So we'll get right into this. This is from a case in Bleams. It's B-O-L-E-N-S, 1912, 135, Northwest Reporter at 164. When I quote those numbers, that's the actual case number. You can look it up. It's from Washington Supreme Court. And what this case was about was a tax issue. And it says here in the court had stated this. It says every taxpayer is a Citizens Q Trust, having significant interest in preventing the abuse of the trust, to be recognized in the field of this court's prerogative jurisdiction as relation to the proceedings to set sovereign authority in motion by action. Note the few words in that case. Every taxpayer is a Citizens Q Trust. Well, that only exists in name only on a piece of paper. So I don't know how. Well, I do know how, but it's a ludicrous for them to say that men and women are taxpayers. They're not, unless you work for the corporate government directly. So let's move on to what, are you a person? Under color of law, the words person and whomever include corporations, companies, associations, firms, partnerships, societies, and joint stock companies, as well as individuals. That direct statute quote comes from one United States Code 1. It's under the definitions of color of law and persons. So they've taken the common language that we are used to. You look it up in the English dictionary, person, that includes a man and woman. But from the legalese standing point in the legal dictionary, they've changed the definition to their own purpose. So let's look at the word include, because that's in the other statute. Include, or the principal form thereof, is defined to compose within, to hold, to contain, enclose, to embrace, involve. That's from Monticello Salt versus Utah, 221 U.S. 455. So the Supreme Court has defined what the word include means. It means it's limited to whatever stated within a statute. So when they say person includes, corporation, organization, etc., that's all it includes. It does not include men, women, or children. Include, to confine within, to hold, to contain, as to the shell of the nut, include in the kernel. A pearl is included in the shell. But in those senses, we more commonly use enclose. And it goes on and on. That's from American Dictionary of English Language, Webster's Dictionary, 1828. It goes on further. Include, enclosure, to shut in, keep within, to confine, within, hold, as in enclosure, take in, ascertain, shut up, contain, enclose, conspires, embraces, involves. That's from Pioneer Products Company versus Cunmore, 240 Oregon, 123. So these courts are defining what the word include means. So when we back up to the word person includes, whatever's written in that statute, that's all it includes, nothing else. Okay, moving on. What happened? Chapter 854, an act to establish a code, or code of law for the District of Columbia, which was approved on March 3rd, 1901 by the 46th Congress, Section 2 at 31 Stat 1189 and 2, where it says, and be it further enacted that in the interpretation and construction of said code, the following rules shall be observed. Third, the word person shall be held to apply to partnerships and corporations, emphasis added. Okay, so we know what a person is, a corporation, not men or women. Go on to U.S. citizen. The term individual means a citizen of the United States or an alien lawfully admitted for permanent residence. That's found in 5 United States Code at 552A(a)(2). Part 13 of that same statute says the term federal personnel means officers and employees of the government of the United States, members of the uniformed services, including members of the reserve components, individuals entitled to receive immediate or deferred retirement benefits under any retirement program of the government of the United States, including survivor benefits. Again, that's 5 U.S.C. 552A(a)(13). Are you a sovereign? Well, everybody was born a sovereign. They may have lost it, presumably lost it, by contracts and misleading words in the government paperwork. This is case Chisholm versus Georgia, and it is still shepherdized. I've checked that recently, which means it hasn't been overturned. It's U.S. Del 2-419-454. And Leasing versus Smith, 4 Weedman 9, New York, 1829. And this is what it said. The main heart of this case says, it says, the sovereignty dissolved on the people. They are the sovereigns without subject and have none to govern but themselves. It's also in People versus Herkimer, 4 Crown, New York, 345. It goes on further to say, the people or the sovereigns are not bound by the general words and statutes restrictive of prerogative right, title, and interest, unless expressively named. In other words, unless you're named in a statute, it don't apply to you. Okay, we're going to move on to something I just discovered here this past week. And I think it's very, very interesting, and I'm about to implement it with some people I'm helping. It's called How to Impeach a Court Officer. That would include a police officer as well. That would include a prosecutor, a district attorney, etc. It's a very simple, straightforward process. The first thing you do in any court case, this is right in the beginning, you put that officer, whoever it may be, whether it's a police officer, a district attorney, a prosecutor, etc., you put them on your witness list only, and take them to trial. That's the first step in this process. Second, go down to your county records and obtain a certified copy of their oath of office. It does not matter if their correct name is on the oath of office. In other words, if it's a fictitious name, it doesn't matter. And you'll see why when we get into this a little further. on the oath. Make sure it is notarized. The third step. From Westlaw, go to any college library and obtain certified copies of the following federal laws. I'm going to quote these laws. It's 5 United States Code 3331. That's 5 United States Code 3331. And 5 United States Code 3332. That's 5 United States Code 3332. And 18 USC 912. 18 USC 912. Those are the three laws you want to get certified copies of. The fourth step is, then you put the officer on the stand. Have them testify that his certified copy of oath of office is his or hers. Once they say it is theirs, you put that into the evidence record in the court case. You must say, Judge, I put this into evidence as their certified oath, and make sure it's put into the evidence. Now that you have the officer testifying that his or her oath of office is his or hers in the evidence record, the fifth step on this, then you show a certified copy of the federal laws, particularly 5 United States Code 1331, or 3331, excuse me. 5 United States Code 3331. Now you have the officer read that law on the record. Once the officer has read Title 5, ask them, your oath of office does not say that, correct? Now, this is what the code is supposed to say. We'll get into that in just a second. The sixth step. Then you put that into the evidence record and say, Judge, I hereby demand that this officer be impeached in direct violation of 18 United States Code 912 for impersonating an officer of the United States. He has a United States flag on his sleeve and a United States flag in this court, which he or she is testifying under, and he or she does not have a proper oath of office. I want to put that into the evidence, Judge. By law, the judge has no choice but to impeach the officer. Now, this is what the codes say, the federal statute. We'll start off with 5 United States Code 1331, oath of office. An individual, except the president, elect or appointed to an office of honor or profit in a civil service or uniform service, shall take the following oath. And this is the exact statement that has to be on their oath of office. This is an example. I, A.B., do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same. I take this obligation freely without any moral reservations or purpose of evasion, and that I will faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I am about to enter. So help me God. This section, well, we don't need to read that part. It's Public Law 554, September 6, 1966. It's 80 stat 5, or 424, excuse me. My eyes ain't working too good tonight. All right, so we're going to go into the second part, 5 U.S.C. 3332. officer affidavit, non-consideration paid for appointment. An officer within 30 days after the effective date of his appointment shall file with the oath of office required by law in section 3331 of this title and affidavit that neither he nor anyone acting in his behalf has given, transferred, promised, or paid any consideration for or in the expectation of hope of receiving assistance in securing the appointment. So in other words, they have to file an affidavit that they're not, nobody gave them money to get that appointment. So in United States Code 912, officer or employee of the United States, it says, whoever falsely assumes or pretends to be an officer or employee acting under the authority of the United States or any department, agency, or office thereof, and acts as such or in such pretended character, demands or obtains any money, paper, document, or other thing of value, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both. That's all I'm going to cover. I just want to say one more thing. If you would like to be on my weekly Saturday night calls, that phone number is 845-385-9503. The access code for that is 401-7367. You can find all my videos on rumble.com at my account, edgeorge44. You can also go to my website, edgeorge44.com. Or if you'd like to learn how to claim your birthright status as an American national with diplomatic immunity, you can email me directly at leadingedge8@gmail.com. Put in the subject line, diplomatic immunity status. So let's open this up for questions, comments, whatever. What do they do? Press star 6 there, Dal?
Yeah, star 6 to unmute and then star 6 to mute. So if anybody's got a question, just give your first name and your state, and then you'll have the floor. Everybody got a question?
Yeah, I have a question.
Yeah. Who's speaking? Just give your first name and state first, please.
This is Rod again in Oregon.
Yes, go ahead.
What was that address again for diplomatic immunity?
That's leadingedge8@gmail. All one word, leadingedge8.
Okay.
Yep.
LEADING.
Yes, that's correct. Leadingedge number 8, not the word, just number 8@gmail.com.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
And the phone number?
Let me say one more thing about that. When you do get the package from me, it includes one-on-one coaching for the sole purpose of comprehending the paperwork and helping you get through the paperwork to claim your birthright status. It does not include helping somebody with any court cases they may have. If you want that kind of assistance, put in the line that you need assistance, and we'll discuss that in a different matter.
Okay. All right.
This is Blue. Now
yeah, go ahead, Blue.
What is the contribution for that national status package?
It is $125. That includes everything. It is a lot of research in there.
Okay. And what was that Saturday number again for the call? 845?
Let me pull it back up here. 845-385-9503. The access code is 401-7367. I do a weekly call every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time.
Thank you.
And the call is free.
Okay. Did you have any questions, or was that it?
That was it. I yield.
Okay. Is there anybody else got a question or comment on anything that's been discussed? Well, this is Daryl. The term person, you know, the word defined person, you know, is could be a man or woman or anything, is generally the definition of person, but they changed the definition into a term, and then the term means basically the company, corporation, or trust, an entity, basically a legal fiction rather than a living soul or a living man. So this is the way the legalese gets applied, you know, in the courts today. So when you think you really don't, you think you know a definition of a word, we really need to look it up and look how they define the term of the word, which can be a lot of times different than we really thought it meant, or has alternative defining application. So. Is there anybody else with a question?
Yeah, Daryl, this is Kent.
Yes, go ahead, Kent.
No, thank you. Ed, one question and then a comment. You were talking about the strict definition of words and includes. You were saying the armed forces, including the reserve component. So would that be like the Army Reserve versus the Army National Guards or the Air National Guard? What is exactly covered when it comes to the armed services?
Give me a second. I got to pull that back up here.
Okay.
I know I said that. I just want to refresh my.
Yeah, I don't know that it differentiates that, but.
Actually, it does not differentiate that. It just says it. So it's not really clear what they mean by that.
Because at one point in time, if we look back to the 60s and 70s, maybe even into the 80s, I'm not sure, and before that, the National Guards, for example, were strictly used within the state when there was civil disorder or something along that line. They didn't go overseas. Today, it's much different with the National Guards. Now, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just commenting on what the facts appear to be today. So I was wondering, when you say about a reserve component, whether or not the National Guards was considered part of the reserve.
Yeah, they're not specifying it. They just say reserve, period, that's it. That's a good question, Kent. That could be a wide-open terminology there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it obviously could affect how one was treated and dealt with.
Yeah.
Assuming they had been a member of the National Guards, or the National Guard, rather. The second comment, thank you for your response on that. The second comment is, you went through this kind of fast regarding 3331, 3332, and 912, and how you would break that down and use it in the court. Maybe I'm just slow at getting that, but I would like to hear it again in a form that we could digest. However, if there's no one else on the call that agrees with me that they would want to hear that again, then I'll forego that request. But I think it would bear repeating.
Well, there's not a lot to say in there. I could go back over those codes. Which I have them right
here. I agree. I would like to hear it again.
Okay. I'm going to repeat this one. This is 5 United States Code 3331. It's under the oath of office requirement. Now, every officer of a court, including police officers, take the United States Constitution oath. And in that oath, it has to have this wording. They just use the example A, B, and S, do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely, without any mental reservations or purpose of evasion, that I will faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I am about to enter, so help me God. Now, I have seen a lot of oath of offices recently here in New York. I've never seen that terminology on these oath of offices. And this is an actual requirement according to federal law. It has to have that. They also, under 5 United States Code 3332, they have to do an affidavit that they're not getting any consideration paid for the appointment of the office that they're entering. And 18 U.S.C. 912 is the penalty. In other words, an officer or employee of the United States who willfully assumes or pretends to be an officer or employee acting under the authority of the United States or any department, agency, or office thereof and acts as such or in such pretended character, demands or obtains any money, paper, document, or thing of value, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both. So those are the three codes that they're actually violating when they take these oaths of office. They're not a proper oath of office, regardless whether they're de facto or not. They're not proper. The statute clearly says this is how an oath of office is to be written out. And they're not doing it. So they can be impeached under 18 U.S.C. 912. And you set them up, if you're going to go in a court, you can set them up by these six steps. Do you want me to go over the six steps again?
I have a question, please. This is Paul in Massachusetts.
Yes.
You're using the term United States, Constitution of the United States, not Constitution of the United States of America, nor for the United States of America. So what constitution is defined in that oath of office?
It is their corporate charter. It is actually the corporation oath of office.
A corporation.
Yeah.
And that which has nothing to do with the Constitution of the United States of America. You're talking about the 14th Amendment, municipal governance of Washington, D.C.?
All right, let me clarify that. This is the corporation Constitution of the United States. Period. That's a corporation. It's a federal corporation. It has nothing to do with the Republic Constitution for the United States of America. Totally different. The point being here in this recommendation, if somebody wants to use it, regardless what constitution you're referring to, they're not following proper procedure according to their corporation statutes.
Okay.
So you can have them impeached. Once they're impeached, there's no case. There's nobody to testify to anything. Because when you go into, for example, you go into court, let's use a traffic example. You go into court and they say you violated, say, a seatbelt law, whatever statute that may be written under. They go in, they're going to have neither a local officer or a state police officer testify on the stand to some fact that he's seen you not wearing the seatbelt, etc. In order for him to be lawfully able to do that, he has to follow that proper protocol to their statutes. Now, I'm not trying to get into regulating the different constitutions. I'm just saying, this is their laws. This is their statutes. They're not ours. They're theirs.
So
you can use them. You can use them against them, is what I'm saying.
Okay, this is just another tool in the box to investigate to see if that particular process has been properly done. And if not, they have to be dismissed or could be prosecuted. But it has nothing to do with the Constitution that is supposed to protect the rights of the people. It is the corporate.
That's correct.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
May I have a question.
Yeah.
This is Rod again.
Yeah. Go ahead, Rod.
You know, in their oath of office, another story, we're dealing with that here in Oregon right now, but with the oath of office where it says to serve and protect, I've often wondered how do these people that put on a gun and a badge serve and protect something that they really know nothing about? I yield.
Well, they're only doing what they're told. They're only following orders and what they're told. I'll give you an example. A long time ago, I was in the firewood business. I used to sell firewood. And I had a young kid working for me. He wanted to be a local police officer. The challenge that he ran into is he went through all the procedures, the boot camp and everything, and he did become a local police officer. But he was fired shortly after because the chief of police found out he had an IQ over 100. I think his IQ was like 125 or something like that. And he was brought into the office, and he was point blank told, we're going to have to let you go because your IQ is over 100. So he asked him, why? He said, well, we don't want people asking questions. We just want people that will follow orders. Don't ask questions. So that's the mentality you're dealing with.
So every time they sign such an oath, what they're committing is perjury right on its face.
That is correct.
Okay, I rest. I yield. Thank you.
Ed?
Yes.
Yeah. So on the side of many police cars, it says to protect and serve. People conclude that that's to protect and serve the public. It doesn't actually say that. It just says to protect and serve. So they could very well be protecting and serving the corporation. That's the first point. The second point is, you're basically saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, that those statutes are their statutes, therefore you're going to hold the feet to the fire. So what you're saying isn't much different than what Dave in Kansas, who works with these oaths of office all the time, collects them and then makes them into a contract with that public servant. He basically says the same thing. So if it's a corporate oath, it's still an oath of office. So I guess that's what you're concluding also.
Yeah, it's working parallel to what Dave's doing. The only difference is he's holding their feet to the fire to protect his rights.
I understand.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for your responses.
Yeah. That's a good point, Ken. And, yeah, it does say that. Like up here, the local town I'm in here in Sydney, New York, they have a local police department. And right on the side of the cars, it says to protect and serve the public. They don't define who the public is.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Ken.
Is there anybody else a question? Press star.
May I?
Okay, who's the man?
Jennifer.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Thanks. Today I just got a response from the county clerk because I asked them via FOIA request whether a particular judge has a oath of office, and the answer was there's nothing on file, and to ask the court. So I called the court, and they said we don't have anything on file for the county clerk. And so actually I'm going to do one for every judge and every employee in the county, I think. But so after I get all that information, what would be the next step to deal with that information?
If they do not have any oath of office on file and you have that in writing, I would demand to have them impeached. I would demand to have them impeached. If they ain't got no oath of office, they ain't got no right being a public official.
Okay, so is there impeachment paperwork in your lot of papers, Ed?
There will be. I'm going to be working on that because this is new information I come across this week.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, that'll be great. In the meantime, I'll actually get a FOIA request for every employee's oath of office and see what happens.
Yeah.
Maybe the whole town will have to be impeached.
Now, if you want to speed up the process for these FOIA requests, if you're local to the county clerk, you can actually go down there yourself and obtain certified copies of them because that's where they keep them. All your towns and county officials are all at the county clerk's office. If it's a state police officer, it's the Secretary of State where you get their oaths of office.
I see. Would a local judge of the Supreme Court of the county be state or county local, do you think?
Local would be county.
Uh-huh. Okay.
If it was a state Supreme Court judge, that would be the Secretary of State.
Okay. State Supreme Court. All right. Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay, is there anybody else a question?
Yeah,
if I may.
Yeah. Who is this?
This is Dave in Kansas.
Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
The county clerk can get all of it, at least here in my county, the county clerk can get you everybody who was elected or has a high up position. He can get you their oath of office. They keep the judge's oath of office at the clerk of the court. And FOIAs are awful nice, but I just walk in and, in fact, anymore, I can just call the county clerk and say, hey, can you get me? I'm going to do it here because we just had a bunch of new people sworn in. I'm going to call him and say, hey, I need a bunch of oaths of office of people just elected. Can you get this for me? And he says, yeah, I'll have them for you tomorrow afternoon. Pick them up. I'll have them in a file for you. I go pick them up. Same way with the clerk of the court. I go over and ask her for the judge's oath of office, and she gets them all for me. But she doesn't know if she has an oath of office. Kind of interesting. I yield.
You know, is there any oath of offices given throughout the country that actually uses this here wordage on their oath? All the ones that I've seen, I've never seen it with this wordage.
Yes, I have. This is Dave again. I gave that. I got that oath signed by about 200 people when I was in the National Guard in a command position, and that's the exact oath of office that the National Guard uses. And it used to be the one that the regular Army used. Now, what they use now, I don't know because I've been around the administrative part of the military since '84, so. They did change the oath to that the enlisted men take. They swear an oath to the commander-in-chief instead of the Constitution. And that's the reason I think that the Guard can be nationalized and sent overseas. Because when I was in, took a special occasion for the Guard to be mobilized. But since I got out, they've gone everywhere and done everything that the regular Army does. I yield.
Yeah, as far as like for the court clerks and police officers and all those is what I was talking about, the civil servants. You know, I've never, on the oaths of office that I've received, I've never seen one that had this wordage. But that's not
neither
of
us.
Yeah. What's that?
So
yeah.
If I may.
Yes, go ahead,
Dave. If I may again. Yeah, in that, I haven't studied 33, 32, but 31, 31, and 31, 33 are in that seven-page package I put out. And if they're in a non-elected position where they're appointed, they have to sign an oath of allegiance. And it doesn't specify what that is, but I'm thinking it's basically the same thing, that they swear to abide by the Constitution or honor it. But I have never seen any oath of office other than the ones I did when I was in the military that had the correct oath of office. But that, you know, that's the reason that, you know, Ed, I think, talked about, or Ray talked about last week, using the administrative procedure. You know, that's, we're sovereigns. We don't have to go into their court. That's the reason we use administrative procedure. When you go into their court, you enter into their jurisdiction, in my opinion. And you're at their mercy. You have to follow their rules. And with their oath of office and administrative process, you stay out of their jurisdiction and you can do whatever you want. Hi, you.
Is Rod here again?
Go ahead, Rod.
You know, here in Oregon, I've took it upon myself right now. I haven't gotten too far with it until the next session, but I'm trying to get a bill put on the, you know, adopted here in Oregon, where everybody that gets involved with law enforcement has to be able to memorize, know their oath of office from start to finish, backwards, inside out, and have a certain amount of knowledge of the Constitution before they're even allowed to accept such a position. And I could go on with more information, that sometimes it's like a big shit show, but in any case, I think that maybe that might be a one option where, you know, bills are passed for all these people that get involved with this law enforcement, dealing with the people and stuff. They have to have a certain amount of knowledge about the Constitution and what the rights are about the people. So that's just an idea that I had, and I'm working with a representative here, whatever. I've never been involved with politics that much, but I've learned how to start, you know, knowing who these people are and what they're really about. So I got a little bit happening with that. So who knows? We'll see what happens. And I yield.
Okay. Was there somebody else that had a question?
This is Phyllis.
Okay.
There's
Go ahead, Phyllis.
A comment in the chat from Melody of Kansas, and she said, as a federal employee, as a USPS postmaster, she got that oath.
Okay.
Are you?
Yeah, Kent, you had something?
Yeah, thank you. I want to address something to Ed. Ed, you gave this as a scenario if someone had a case and how to impeach them. What would be the scenario if you wanted to do that, but there was no case pending against you, but you wanted to basically do this same procedure to put them out of business, number one? Number two, what would be the chances that they might want to take the correct oath and correct that problem rather than resign or leave? And thirdly, would it then be possible somehow to tie this into the fact that they haven't taken an oath to the Republic, but they've taken it to the corporation after 1871. So if you could address those three issues, I think it would be helpful. And then as a general comment, we've transposed some of the numbers here. I've heard 3331 and 1331, and the same thing with the 3332 versus 1332. So could we have clarification on those numbers, please? I yield.
Absolutely. That's a good question. Yes, I am going to incorporate some paperwork here Like I said in previous ones, I am calling their bluff on their taking an oath of office to a de facto corporation. They're not with the de jure republic. I'm going to incorporate this new information in that package, challenging them. Even though there's no court case, I'm going to confront them to that and demand they either take a proper oath of office or impeach themselves by resigning. I don't know exactly how I'm going to word it, but I will draft something up here very shortly. And if anybody wants to be available. Hold on.
We did every case in Oregon on that.
Okay. When I get it done, I'll let people know. It probably won't be another week or so before I get to it. But the actual codes I referred to in this presentation were 5, United States Code 3331. 5, United States Code 3331. That's their oath of office. That's the proper statement that has to be on their oath of office according to that statute, that federal code. The second part of that is 5, United States Code 3332, which is an affidavit that has to accompany their oath of office stating that they did not get any consideration for that appointment, and it has to be filed within 30 days after the effect of the appointment. The third statute was 18 U.S.C. 912. Which states officer or employee of the United States who falsely assumes or pretends to be an officer or employee acting under the authority of the United States or any department, agency, or office thereof. So the three statutes again are 5, United States Code 3331. That's the proper oath of office that has to state. The second part of the oath of office is 5, United States Code 3332. That's the affidavit that accompanies it. The third one is 8 U.S.C. 912. That's the statute they're violating by pretending to be an officer of the United States. Does that help you, Ken?
Yeah, it does, but I would add one comment. I would add one comment to that. Do you think that we might be doing ourselves a disservice by allowing them to correct it? And then at the same token, as you were saying, you were thinking about how you could incorporate this so they'd be compelled to take an oath to the republic, to the constitutional republic, as opposed to the corporation. I mean, we're almost asking for two different things there, which seems to give them an argument for an out.
Well, let me clarify that. The document that I will put together will require them to take an oath of office to the republic. If they refuse to, they need to take them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know exactly how I'm going to word it yet. I haven't even gotten that far with it.
Yeah. I'll leave it at that for now. Thank you for your comments.
If I may.
Okay. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah. You guys are going to get tired of hearing from me. Regardless of what oath they take, they've already perjured themselves with the job that they're doing. There's, correct me if I'm wrong, Ed, but there's only one word difference between the 1871 Constitution and the 1791 Constitution, right?
That's true.
Do they make gold and silver?
Well, they haven't done that in a long
time. That's for the state. They're violating the Constitution, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like I said, they've perjured themselves and put themselves in jail just by taking a public official, and all those rules apply to them. You know, you left out a couple of cases that maybe I didn't read right or something, but there's a 1980 case, Brady versus United States, that says you, a sovereign cannot knowingly or unknowingly relinquish his sovereignty. And Marone versus a Hickory Apache Indians from 1982 Judge Rehnquist wrote the final case opinion, and in there he makes a statement, the idea that sovereignty could ever be relinquished places the whole idea of sovereignty on its head. If we are sovereign, it doesn't make any difference. Whatever they say, it doesn't apply to us. They work for us, and we need to explain to them, hey, you know, that's for those people that work for you, but you work for me. And there's a lot of people out there. You know, when I talk to people and tell them when I accept their oath of office, and they say, well, everything I've been doing is wrong. And I said, no, you've been doing it right for most of the people out there, but not for me. I'm going to hold your feet to the fire because you said you were going to do this. If you're not going to do that, then I'm going to have to take the appropriate actions because you're violating my rights, my God-given rights, not just my civil rights. Everybody talks about civil rights, man. We got God-given rights. Just like Phyllis reads every week, we hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal, endowed by their Creator, with certain unalienable rights. Among them, not exclusive, but among them, are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, or the ownership of property. Governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. That's the sovereigns. If we do not consent, they cannot govern. That little idea there cost me 6.5 years in prison. If we do not consent, they can't do anything. I yield.
Okay. Is there anybody else with a question?
May I? Jennifer?
Yeah, go ahead,
Hello?
Jennifer. Yeah, go ahead,
Thank
Jennifer.
You. Okay. So, I mean, shouldn't past judgment that judges have made while without taking the oath be null and void?
Yeah, they would be. If you notice, any time a judge makes a ruling, he says it's the opinion of the court. So it's just an opinion. It's not law.
And so what does that mean?
It means it's his personal opinion. It doesn't mean it's the judgment of the court. If you look at any case law prior to 1900, you will see a lot of them say it's the order of the court or it's the judgment of the court. It does not say it's the opinion of the court. Opinion is just somebody's opinion. Doesn't make it law.
I see. So could you have used that no oath of office to nullify a judgment or an opinion that they made recently?
Yes. You could go back and reverse any so-called order from judges' rulings by a direct collateral attack.
Right. And I don't quite understand the 5 U.S.C. 3332 affidavit talking about they can't be paid. Well, I thought, how can someone work and not get paid? I don't understand that.
3332... In other words, they cannot receive any compensation being paid for the appointment itself. When they're doing their duties, yes, they can get paid.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It talks about the consideration paid for the appointment. That
right.
means when they enter that office. So, in other words, for the privilege of entering that office, they can't be paid any money.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Is there anybody else with a question?
Yeah, Daryl, if nobody else has a question, I want to ask Ed to clarify something or enhance something.
Okay. Well, if there's no other questions, go ahead, Ken.
Okay. Thank you. So, Ed, couldn't we carry this one step further You're talking about reversing an order and because it's only an opinion, etc. If we really look at this strictly, why is the U.S. Supreme Court even taking some of the cases they're taking? They should only really be dealing with constitutional issues, should they not? So a lot of these cases they take don't necessarily deal with a constitutional issue. So how do they even have any jurisdiction to take the case to begin with? I realize they're doing it, but I mean, if you hold their feet to the fire, how could they do what they're doing to begin with?
They're not supposed to, but they are doing it. And what they're using, I've learned this from a federal judge, they're using what they call the necessary and proper clause of the Constitution, which only applies to the states. It doesn't apply to the people. So in other words, whatever they deem necessary and proper, they'll do whatever they want.
So are you suggesting with that clause, when they stretch that clause, which I think you're saying they do, are you suggesting that in applying to the states that a state court or a legislative court designated as a state court could try and do that under necessary and proper, but that the U.S. Supreme Court could not do that because that's not a state court?
No, what I'm suggesting is all courts are doing that, not just the Supreme.
Mm-hmm.
Every court. They're not going to say that. They won't tell you that. They will not acknowledge that in any way, shape, or form. But I've learned this directly from a federal circuit judge.
Mm-hmm.
I've had the chance to speak to him personally. And he said that what they're doing, they're not even using law. They're just using the necessary and proper clause against the people, which do not apply to us. The necessary and proper clause was specifically to regulate the states themselves, the corporate states,
mm-hmm.
not the republic states. So that's what they're doing. They'll never admit it.
Okay. I would agree.
We could take this one step further.
Mm-hmm. Right, I'm glad you interjected that into the conversation. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Who is the may I?
Jennifer.
Yeah. What state you're from, Jennifer? Can you give the
New
state?
York.
Okay.
New York.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Are the oaths of office for people who are appointed versus those that are elected different, or are they meant to be the same?
They're meant to be the same, whether they're appointed or elected.
Okay.
Does that answer your question, Jennifer?
Yes. Yes, thanks.
Okay. Ed, on most of these here oaths of office by the commissioners and the treasurer and the judges and stuff that don't have this oath, would they be considered not having an oath at all if they didn't take this one?
Oh, absolutely. They don't belong in office unless they take that oath of office.
So they would be automatically eligible to be impeached?
Yeah. They should disqualify themselves immediately.
Would leave a lot of offices open pretty much immediate.
Does that work? Yes. Probably some of those offices we don't need anyhow.
Well, I'm sure. Most of them are just a revenue-generating opportunity for them.
Right.
Okay, is there anybody else with a question?
Rochelle in Idaho.
Yeah, go ahead, Rochelle.
So I asked the school board and also the superintendent, the ones that were running for superintendent, will you take an oath of office? And one of them said that she would, and the rest is, I never actually asked them because I didn't think they were worth asking. But at any rate, none of them had an oath of office. They had a pledge of loyalty. So they all came up with an oath of office. It's not the one that Ed explained is proper. So should the people in the school district, the parents, decide that they want to reform the school district, it seems to me it'd be pretty easy to demand a proper oath of office and give them an opportunity to correct that, even though they've been in arrears all this time. How would you correct something like that, if you may?
I would go in and expose that they don't have a proper oath of office and demand that they either take one to the Republic or resign.
And the problem is there's no Republic. It's all a corporation.
No.
It's about to be announced very soon.
Well, maybe it would be proper to let them know ahead of time so that they could be prepared or be prepared to step down one way or the other.
Yeah, I would agree with that, yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution really guarantees, or the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government, and shall protect each of them from invasion, against invasion. Mm-hmm. So that's all part of the oath to the Constitution. So it's a guarantee to the people.
One more thing I was told, this is Rochelle, that anybody who is elected by the people to a public office, before they autograph anything with their private name, that they have the right, being elected, to they have the right to demand an audit, an out of state or an unbiased law audit, a state audit, especially in most counties where there's fraud happening in the books. So at that point, everything in the whole county would be exposed if they were able to do that. However, in our county, no one's had the nerve to do that yet. So have you had any experience in that at all, using the audit, a state, independent state audit, to expose fraud in the county, Ed?
Not specifically for the county. I've done it with mortgage foreclosures and stuff, but not specifically with counties.
Mm-hmm. It sounds very powerful, I think. The ones that are told to do this and will help you get elected, then when they get in office, someone gives them a little talk and they never ask for an audit. So it's kind of that says a lot. Anyway, just a side to the oath. Thank you, Ed.
You're welcome. Sounds like a fear tactic to me.
Oh, yes.
Okay, is there anybody else with a question? If you're muted, you got to press star 6. Okay. No other questions?
I just thought of another one. This is Jennifer.
Okay, go ahead, Jennifer.
So I went to a land tax grievance day, and of course they denied taking me off the roll, and none of them have oaths of office. After I pointed out they had none and I wanted to see one that was certified, they did one to the corporation. But now I've forgotten what my question was about it. Could I write them a letter and say that their opinion is null and void because they had no oath of office and they should resign their position and just say that in a letter?
You're a sovereign, yeah. You can do whatever you think is proper. See, the government works for you. You don't work for them. And that's what they've done. They've twisted this for years and years and years, and they got everybody thinking, oh, well, we got to obey the government. We got to obey these public officials. It doesn't work that way. They work for you.
I'm just wondering if I do it on my own, you know, my house might blow up. But if a group of people get together and do it together, you know, could that be a possibility somehow?
Well, I would recommend getting a group, sure.
Would they have to be from the same county, or would they be...
Not necessarily, no.
Uh-huh.
They could be an adjacent county, like if you're in Sullivan County, it could be Delaware County. It could be Otego County, it could be any of the other surrounding counties.
Okay, I'll put the word out now then. Does anyone want to join me? You can let me know. You don't have to say anything now.
I'm doing that right now, the Bureau of Offices. I'm not doing it on the school board. I'm doing it on these public officials, where judges, prosecutors, et cetera.
Yeah, I want to do the judges, and I want to do the land tax people, because none of them had close of office either.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Would you do this as a notice and put that into the record? Or how do you initiate it?
Yeah, I'm planning on putting it to the record. I'm going to start recording my documents in the county records of what I'm doing.
As a notice and affidavit of fact or something like that, or
something like that. I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to structure this yet.
Ed, may I? This is Sherry on Washington. Look up notice by publication. That's really important, that terminology, notice by publication. And then put it in the paper. You know, that's the most important thing, because otherwise, I mean, everybody looks down at paying to put it in a newspaper, but I would rather put it in the newspaper than give those crooked jackasses any cash. You know what I'm saying? I hate the thought of having to record anything in the county, but notice by publication is a proper term, by proximate cause.
By what cause?
By proximate cause. And sister, if you want to message me in the chat, let's exchange numbers, because I've been fighting with the county for 3 years on the property tax issue, and I'd love to talk to another sister that's, you know, having their go-arounds with them, because the big showdown's coming. So please, everyone, as I mentioned, and I'm going to hurry and hush up here, but please keep me in prayer January 15th, when I'm going to have my Board of Equalization hearing, which we really know in truth is the Privy Council that they want everybody to think went bye-bye. But the Privy Council sits over everybody in every county, in every city.
Would Washington elaborate on that? What definition of a Privy Council?
Privy Council, it's part of the King's Bench.
And in what way would it be used properly?
I'm not saying it's being used properly. I'm saying it's being used improperly. That's what this Board of Equalization is. It's a Privy Council. In fact, here in downtown Richland, they have a Benton Council of Government. It's what they call it on their building, Council of Government, Benton and Franklin County. And I'm like, what? I haven't gotten in there to talk to them yet, but I took a few snapshots. And they are another organization that's controlling the local government.
Interesting. Are they above the high water mark where they meet?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by that, but I've heard of that terminology, but I don't know who these people are. I just know that they seem to be influencing and steering. They're like a steering committee is what I guess I should say. Steering, you know, out on the sea. Of Admiralty, anyway.
May I?
I think it's very important to go to your county courthouse, find a cornerstone, and on that cornerstone, to be a lawful courthouse that's under, I believe, at any rate, from what I can see where I live, that there is a bronze marker, anyway, here, and it is set into the stone by the surveyor, the oceanic surveyors when the building was built, and all courts of law that go back when our Constitution was still common law, at least partly, they have to be above the high water mark, so they're not the pirates' courts, they are the common man's court on the land. That's the whole idea of it. So many of the new courts, I noticed during COVID especially, they would have, oh, we'll have the court down here in this building, there's a lot of people coming, and they'll just get a lot of chairs in there in a building, and it wouldn't be a court at all for a lot of reasons. But anyway, I think that's real important. I haven't studied much on it, but it makes sense to me, and I yield.
May I?
Okay. Well, who is this?
Greg from Oregon.
Go ahead, Brad.
Greg.
Oh, go ahead, Fred.
No, my name's Greg.
Oh, Greg. Okay, sorry, I didn't catch that.
Okay.
Go ahead, Greg.
It was mentioned privy, a king's bench. A king's bench is a two-branch court, and it's the king's bench is addressed in the Federalist paper. And our country is an experiment, and we went from Europe king's bench court to a three-branch court. And so today, somehow, the privy, they're putting people back into a two-branch court, which is so we're supposed to be in a three-branch court, not a two-branch court, and the three-branch court is what gives us our liberty and our protections and a Republican form of government. And when you go into a king's bench, you're not in a Republican form of court anymore.
Corporate
New
court.
World Order court.
Or monarchy.
Yeah. And so you still have your right to the three-branch court, but you have to demand it. And you have to go to the vested power of the judicial branch. And the privy court is the executive branch of the state. Why do you want to talk to the governor for? He's not the judicial power. The judicial power is the judicial branch. And you got to get out of the executive branch of the king's bench. Now, I talked to an attorney that doesn't practice as an attorney. It's more of a paralegal researcher. And I was told by her, an attorney, that she doesn't practice in the bar membership because she didn't say King's Bench, but she says because the laws are written by the executive branch, and those laws are the administrative rules, and those administrative rules are regulating our country, and those are King Bench rules, a two-branch court rule, and not a three-branch rule. And if you understand what I'm saying, maybe you don't, but all I know is that when you go to court, you're supposed to be in a three-branch court, a judicial power of the judicial branch. And everybody's going to a judicial power of the executive branch. Well, there's no such thing as an executive branch judge anywhere in the Constitution. There's only a three-branch judge of the judicial branch, but that's how the American people are getting fleeced out of their
liberties and out of their rights and not being heard in the court. And instead, they're being picked up off their feet in the court and hauled off to the prisons because they're in the wrong court. And they can't hear you. So you have to get out of that wrong court and go into the correct court. And the correct court is the three-branch court with the vested power. There's no vested power judge in the two-branch court of the executive branch. That's not a vested power. The vested power is the judicial power that's vested.
You want to explain the difference between the two-branch court and the three-branch court? I don't know if everybody understands that.
The two-branch court is the executive branch and the legislature. There's no judicial branch.
I think what he's saying in simple terms, the two-branch court is a statutory court. The three-branch court is a common law court.
No, I'm not. There's three branches of government, and there's a judicial department in the executive branch. Go look at your state constitution.
May I? I'm going to quote here out of this book by sedum.org. This book is called Corporatization and Privatization of the Government. And it has form number 05.024 on it. And I'm reading from page 283. And it says, all judicial districts were abolished in 1856 by the 34th Congress. The Act of Congress, August 16, 1856, regulating courts in this territory and requiring the judges of the Supreme Court to assign places for holding courts, took effect when the order was made pursuant to the Act. The judicial district of King County, having been abolished by the order of the judges. Now, November 10, 1856, under said Act, the clerk of the court from that date lost his legal existence. Hence, his subsequent official acts were nullities. I bought this book, and in whoever wrote this, the sedum.org group, put a lot of effort into Washington. It's really overwhelming what I found in this book. So I understand a little bit about what you're saying. I yield.
Who is speaking?
I'm coming back. May I?
This is Sherry on Washington.
Okay, go ahead.
So you're good.
May I?
Yeah, go ahead, Greg.
Okay. That's not true out of that book. The National Constitution says that there's law and equity arising under the Constitution. And yes, the states abolished the common law court. But the UCC, Uniform Commercial Code, put it back in. Article 1-103, it says law and equity. So you have to go to the UCC to get your law and equity common law court. But the National Constitution or the Supreme Court of the United States of America is still law and equity. And the states abolished law and equity. But that's fine. The states got it back because they adopted the Uniform Commercial Code in the years of around 61, 62, and 63. All 50 states have adopted it. And law and equity is in the Uniform Commercial Code. That's how you get your common law court back. You got to quote it. UCC 1-103, the state renumbered it to their state system. So you can use both numbers. You use the state, or you can use both numbers: the federal Uniform Commercial Code or the adopted number that the state has you have to go to the state, whatever chapter of the state. In Oregon, the chapters are 71, 72, and 73. Chapter 71, 72, 73. Those are the chapters that adopted all the Uniform Commercial Code. So it's been renumbered into 71, 72, and 73. And every state's different. They have their own number system. But the federal is Uniform Commercial Code. It's called commercial law. Law on equity.
Okay.
And so it's not abolished. It's abolished in the statute, but they put it back in the adopted Uniform Commercial Code. It's back in.
Actually, it was created by their RCW, so I'm not here to argue with you. I'm just saying that the state of Washington's courts were created by statute, and so they are
legislative. Yeah, and that's 62, that's 62A. 1-103.
Yeah, that's I know. What I have adopted. A copy of the RCWs yeah. for that yeah. statute. Yeah, that's 62A. I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you quote that in court, they go silent. But you have to quote what part of it you want. You want law and equity of 62A 1-103. Law and equity. They don't know what to do with you now. You use it to get out of their court because they got you in a King's Bench court, and you use it to get out of it to do a settlement, or to give you a law and equity court. They should at least give you a law court and get out of equity, because law is... They got you in an equity court, but you can ask for a law court. But I ask for law and equity because I want the equity out of the provisions of the law, which is the Constitution. I don't want admiralty law. I want Constitution law. And Constitution law and the state of Washington framed their Constitution based on the national Constitution to be a union state. They had to be a union state. And the national Constitution says law and equity, Article 3. All cases, not one case. All cases under law and equity arising under the Constitution.
Okay.
All cases. Got to remember the word all. It's spelled out in the National Constitution, and the National Constitution, nowhere in there does it say it's abolished. So whoever read that book... It's a lie.
Okay, is there anybody else in discussion?
May I?
Yes.
This is Christiane. Greg, I would be interested in connecting with that common law lawyer that you know. So I would appreciate if I can send Phyllis an email and you would contact me. I yield.
John could send Phyllis an email and she'll forward it on to Greg. If she's got his contact information.
Thank you. I yield.
Is there anybody else with a question? If not, Ed, how would you go about enforcing this, you know, when you present this notice, you know, by affidavit of fact or whatever, and make this a part of the record, then how would you go about implementing the enforcement of it?
I would go after their insurance bonds.
Okay. And then let them do the dirty work.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so anybody else? Otherwise, we're...
Yeah, I am.
Is
Somebody want to say something? Okay. Does somebody want to say something or not? Okay. Well, if there's anybody that's new on the call that does not receive the notices for the Tuesday or Thursday night calls, and would like to receive the notices that you send out every day before the calls, you can send Phyllis an email. She'll want your first name, your state, who invited you to the call, and a phone number. We do not share any contact information with anyone. It's kept internal. But if somebody would want to reach out to you, they'll send Phyllis an email, and she will forward that on to you. And then it'll be up to you to talk to the party at your convenience. So, Phyllis, do you want to give out your email?
Yes. It is blueridge1121@gmail.com. blueridge1121@gmail.
Okay. Next week we'll have next Tuesday we'll have Ray from Michigan, and we're going to do the administrative process part two that he started last Tuesday, and then the following week on the 17th we'll be doing part three of that administrative process. So it should be very informative and very helpful. And this is the way that we can exercise our Article 3 judicial power and do it through an administrative record or process without going through their corporate court, for-profit court system. So,
Darryl?
Yes, Ken?
Yeah, let's have Ed give a short description of what he's going to speak on next week at the Americans for Legal Reform, which is the same night as this call on the 10th of December.
Okay. Ed, you want to share a little bit on what you're going to be sharing?
Well, as far as I know, the way it was worked out, they're going to use that video presentation. And that's basically just a little history about me, how I got started in this, and how I come about to where I'm at today.
Right. I brought it up because there may be some people on this call that don't know your history and how you got started, and that could be an important part to show people what you do and why you came to where you're at, and that's why I gave it. And it doesn't have to be that it's in conflict with this call next week. They can go back to the original Facebook page of Americans, that's plural, the digit 4, legalreform.com, and look at that presentation if they so desire. I yield.
Let me pull that script up. I'll give you a better description of it. It's basically the history about myself, how I got started on this back in the early 80s and coming forward to now. It's how I got started when I learned about the certificate of title. It's not actually your ownership of car. And that led me on this journey to dig into this and research this. And it's just a story about me, how I come about this, my knowledge on it, et cetera.
Okay, thank you.
Well, Ed, we appreciate you sharing the knowledge that the Lord revealed to you, and it is very helpful. And this is really a good prime example of iron sharpening iron, where you help us to basically understand, you know, some of the research that you've dug out. And it's a lot easier to study from some research like this than it is to go and dig it up from scratch, because you don't know where you're looking, and sometimes you go down all kinds of rabbit trails to finally find what you're looking for. But, Ed, we want to thank you for your contribution and for all this information that you've shared. It's been a true blessing, and for everybody that has participated and who had come to this call to listen and learn, and the next step is applying. So I think we've got a lot of arsenal here to use to help correct the abuse of power that's going on. And it starts with the oath of office of the public servant, where that is basically the quid pro quo contract that we have with each one of them, that they will operate within the constraints of their oath of office to the Constitution. And they've been operating outside of the Constitution for a long time. And just as we've been using tokens, Federal Reserve private foreign corporation tokens, in substitute for money under war power, which was unconstitutional to begin with, where they are personating. And when they personate us, they're holding us in the capacity of another. And this is a deception that has basically enslaved each and every one of us. So with that, we'll close out. Is there anybody that would like to close in a word of prayer? If not, then I will. Heavenly Father, we come before you to thank you, Lord, for the information that has been shared tonight. We just thank you, Lord, for all those who have come to the knowledge of the truth, and that we can continue to exercise the judgment of truth as you've already judged the world.
I'm tired.
We just pray, Lord, that you continue to guide and direct our steps and just help us to work together, and let's help us to break down the walls of separation that have caused division between so many of the peoples. And we ask you, Lord, for unity as we move forward, and for your wisdom and guidance as we continue to expose the unfruitful works of darkness. And we ask you, Lord, for strength and for healing in this land, that we can return to your principles, and that we can be once again recognized as one nation under God with liberty and justice for all. And we love you, Lord, and we thank you for the sacrifice you gave for us. And we ask you, Lord, to forgive us where we fail you, and pray that you continue to give us your grace and mercy and prepare the way before us in the name of Yeshua. Amen. Well, thank you, everyone, for coming on the call. And until we meet again next Tuesday, we'll see you then. So be safe and stay in good health as winter's approaching. And watch out for the deception. It is everywhere. But on the attached videos, there's some very good, I would recommend, I got it up on the screen. It's called Disengaging Entirely from the United States or United Nations Debacle. And it's a 4 minute and 47 minute video, and it's the last one on the attachment. It is absolutely an excellent deal. I think it's on there. I might have added it after I send it out. I'm not sure. But there's a lot of good information in those videos, a lot of information that really helps us to comprehend the depth of what's going on around us and within this country that needs to be cleaned up. So with that, we'll say good night all until we meet again. Lord be with you.